be willing to lean on those other people, having conversations. You and I've had phone conversations in the past to answer questions and to solve problems and navigate next steps. And we try to do that. I know you do as well, but we try to do that on a regular basis. Like, I'm always available. I tell people all the time, like, give me a call. Hey, everyone. Welcome back to Business Aspirin. I'm your host, Clint Janelle, and I have with me today a friend of mine I've known for a little over a decade, at least, John May. And John is with Georgia Environmental Services. John, how are you, my friend?
I am good. How are you?
I'm good, dude. It's so good to have you on. We haven't done this part yet.
We have not. I scheduled it a couple of times. Conflicts ended up with some depositions, and here we are.
Here we are. Well, hopefully those all work themselves out. Maybe we get into that in the conversation. Maybe we don't. But let's jump right into it. Tell our listeners who John is and the litany of businesses that you do and run. Let's talk about John as an entrepreneur.
So as an entrepreneur, got into the restoration industry in 1999 while I was a firefighter, paramedic. They don't get paid well, so you had to find something part-time to do. Made it through to about 2005, was injured in the line of duty. Said, you know what? I'm going to leave this and go do the mitigation stuff full-time. Up to today, so I've owned plumbing companies, know the pros and cons, and can tell contractors about having the plumbing companies or not. Mitigation, biohazard, indoor environment, and indoor air quality and environmental, plus public adjuster.
And so right now, what's your wheelhouse? What's your most active role? What do you participate in the most?
So the biggest thing we do now is indoor environmental. So I'm a certified industrial hygienist now, and we've also launched in the last 12 months the PA side.
Okay. So for those of you, some of you in the restoration space that listen to this, understand what an industrial hygienist is and understand what a PA is. But those of you that are plumbers or HVAC guys, the industrial hygienist world is one where he's going to be able to go in and inspect commercial and residential properties, in most cases in your world, for mold, asbestos, radon, lead. Tell us what you're doing on that.
Yeah. Side. So from the hygienist side, it's more to the industry. It's more mold, asbestos, silica, dust exposure. We do a lot of categorization of water to identify the true categorization of the water for certain restorers. Bio load research to see how far the contaminants actually went in a home. A lot of contractors get so fixated on that wow moment within where the damage happened, and they miss where all the contaminants have gone. So it's coming in and basically doing research of being the investigator of the home to identify where there's hazards and what that hazard is.
Both fire and water in that case, I would assume.
Fire, water, trauma, asbestos, lead, and lately a lot of HVAC with the humidity that the Southeast has had this year with the summer and homes AC running and they're still in the 70% relative humidity. People are starting to see a lot more surface microbial growth.
In and around HVAC vents, right? Yeah, for sure. Sure. Okay, so you've ventured off into multiple different spaces. You've kept some of them. You've moved away from some of them. Talk about the mental process to go through of saying opening up an entrepreneurial business, a home service business of some kind, and what that looks like to you and how you make some of those decisions to step into a space.
So first, it takes research. It's not one of the things that you could just throw the spaghetti against the wall and see what sticks if you want to be successful at it. So wrapping your brain around where you're going into, what you're going to do in that space, how you do it. The biggest thing I've done is found people that were experts in it and basically went and said, hey, I scratch your back, you scratch mine. I'll teach you something. You teach me what you know. And that's how I ventured into when I got into the plumbing side of it. And the hygienist side, I have some formal education around that side with a degree in environmental health toxicology, master's in public health, and then working on the PhD in public health. So getting in that side, it was more education science driven. So I know it. But picking up the business side of it and identifying who's the client I want, what's the service I want to provide, what's that number that's going to fit the model of business I want to create. And I don't want to be the Burger King dollar menu guy. I'd rather be the Chick-fil-A guy, right? So then identifying where does my service fit in a market? Is that, if that market's not right next to me, how can I build that company 80 miles away? Trust the people I put into it up there. Trust that those things are going to be done while still trying to be a sane living individual that's a husband and a dad.
Yeah. And try to tie all those together and keep them where everybody's still happy with the service you're providing as a father, as a husband, as a service provider. So you're Georgia Environmental. Tell people where you're located and what area you actually service.
So Georgia Environmental, I'm located truly halfway between Atlanta and halfway between Macon, just enough outside of the city to not deal with the traffic every day, but to deal with the traffic three or four times a week. We service the full state of Georgia, state line to state line. We have a sister company that actually covers all the surrounding states. So we cover the whole true Southeast when it comes to environmental, from mold, asbestos, lead, silica, which is the new big thing that's coming to the industry. So those environmental things, we can cover the whole Southeast.
Sure. And so then you're building a new business and you're trying to check the numbers and trying to determine what your market is and who your client base is and if there's the right fit for what you're doing, which is what most entrepreneurs should do, is try to determine what's going on. Then who is your primary target for clients in the environmental space?
And so the biggest target we've gone to is talking to allergy doctors and immunologists. That was the niche we went to first because it gave us that clientele we were looking for. And now that we got that base, that the company was being sustained, payroll's met, we're not having to borrow from the owner to take care of it. Now that it's sustained, then we started a marketing campaign to go out and start talking to the restoration industry, HVAC companies, plumbing companies. One of our biggest things that we talk about is asbestos, and that misconception that, oh, if it was built after 1980, you don't have to test it. And educating contractors that, no, OSHA says in the due diligence clause that the homeowner has to check it no matter when it was built, or they can be held liable, or educating them how Georgia Environmental Protection Division has a state statute that clearly says, hey, we don't care when it was built. If you're cutting more than 10 square foot of drywall, you better test it. So we've gotten that base from our health industry where we can provide for the company. So then we started in the last year going out and building that more in the construction space.
Yeah, the services space. The other guys do other services to tackle that. The two interesting things there that I want to attack a little bit. One is, one of the things that we say to people regularly, which you did perfectly and brought up very well here, is we say for people, what you need to do in your business is find people who have your clients that you don't compete with in order to build a relationship with them in order to get new client base. You did that exactly with allergists and immunologists, right? Those guys have a lot of the people that you're looking for that need your service that you can help. So it's mutually beneficial for the doctor who's providing that service to be able to go, hey, I think your house is part of the problem. The client who needs to feel better and have a better environment that they live in. And for you, because you're able to provide a service and that's how you make your living, and doing that in a manner that helps others. And that's spectacular.
Right.
And so talk about that. Like, how did you, because a lot of service industry guys, John, you know this as well as I do, a lot of service industry guys don't think outside the box enough to go, where do I go look for those people who have my clients that don't compete with me? How did you talk about thinking?
That's something a business owner's got to do. They've got to teach themselves that they can look outside the box. We're in industries that are changing every day. We're in the AI world. Even for you and I in the restoration space, AI is going to make an impact to it. And it's whether you evolve with it or you let it run you over. But as a business owner, you got to take that hat off. You got to take yourself out of the game. The biggest problem with a lot of business owners in the service trade is they were the service trade individual at some point. So they're the master at being a plumber, being the HVAC guy. They've got to take themselves out of being that technician for a while and put themselves in the business owner spot, and open their eyes, and they'll start seeing those other avenues. Me, Google, YouTube, Facebook, I talk to people. My wife hates it. We'll go to restaurants. I'm interviewing people, not just for employees, but just looking for customers. And a lot of times you'll find information from somebody else and you're not even out looking for it. And honestly, that's how I come up with the immunologist. I was at my kid's pediatrician and we were talking and I brought up something about mold and he said immunologist. And I'm like, oh, there it is.
And that's what I wanted to get to, is like that process where it's like, it's not necessarily that I just went, you know what, I need to go find the doctors that deal with mold. It was naturally in a conversation while dealing with your kid at the doctor, something popped up and it's like, oh yeah, that's who I need to talk to. That's how I go navigate one of the first steps in my market. And I want those that listen to this podcast to be able to go, okay, that's what I've got to try to navigate as well, is how do I put myself in a position where I'm thinking clearly enough and talking to people the right way that I can open my mind up from that perspective, right? That's the biggest thing, is open your mind to the possibility of what is out there that may not be just locked up to being a plumber. It may not be just locked up to being, oh, well, I'm a restoration technician and I'm going to start my own business, because you've got to think through those things and be open-minded enough to capture those opportunities when they exist. And I love it. The second thing I want to kind of navigate a little bit, the asbestos side of things. Uh-huh. Because, you know, you bring that up and, you know, it's in Texas, residentially, there's no requirement by the state to actually test a property for asbestos. Georgia has one. OSHA has one. OSHA has a requirement that says, hey, if you're going to do this, this could be a problem. So advice to home service guys in regard to asbestos from their liability perspectives. In all this, as an electrician, as a plumber, as an HVAC guy, what are you going to tear up? What are you going to do? What are you going to cut? All of that.
So I start, when I'm talking to anyone about asbestos, and we're talking about the federal level, like for Texas, first is educating my customer. That's the most important person to me when I'm there, is that customer. And 29 CFR 1926-1101 is the standard for asbestos. And in that, it talks about the building owners and their rights of due diligence, so that they're responsible to look into what their home has. This is the only section that OSHA has identified a building owner as a statutory employer. And what they mean by that building owner can be found civil and criminally liable if it's disturbed and it's in the home and they didn't do their due diligence to rule it out. So start at, hey, building owner, you're responsible. Then you look at the service provider. Service provider falls under that same guidelines that the homeowner does, or the building owner, that it's their job to rule it out. So OSHA basically says it's positive until you verify it's not. We've seen, was it the first part of this year? I believe it was. You got the contractor in Colorado. He knew it was positive, and they just sent him to prison for, I believe, 12 years because he exposed his employees to it. There's contractors all over the U.S. You can go in and pull up OSHA's fines, where OSHA and the EPA have fined contractors, mitigation contractors, plumbing, electrical, anywhere from $1,300 to, I've seen some as high as $160,000.
Or 12 years in prison.
Or 12 years in prison. A lot of people don't realize OSHA's fine. It's a little over $16,000 this year for a violation. You get caught violating it the second time, it's 10 times that. It's $160,000 for the second violation.
Touching a specific. My insurance policy and my insurance adjuster says I don't have insurance to pay for abatement.
That's, insurance doesn't dictate what you do as a contractor. First off, safe and healthy of your employees. Second off, a lot of service people don't realize that if you go out and you disturb that material and you're not protected in certain types of insurance, your workers' comp may not cover that employee that gets hurt or sick. General liability, if you don't do the due diligence to protect your company, your general liability may say, hey, we don't owe to clean up that house because you made the boo-boo, because you should have checked. Not talking about policies, you know, there's other avenues to talk for, to take care of somebody's policy, but I think you would agree with me, you wouldn't let your company do something to violate the law just because a policy doesn't cover it. I don't think you'd put your people in harm's way.
You don't want to do that, right? At the same time, you're going to talk about restoration contractors and plumbing companies and all these people all across the country that the customer doesn't have the money to be able to correct this problem that they have in their property, and still want to be able to provide a quality service to that customer. So now what?
So this is the hardest one for any business owner. Sometimes you have to figure out when a customer's not the right customer. Sometimes you have to fire a customer. Sometimes they don't fit with your core values and your ethics of your company. They don't fit with your business model. 15 years ago, I would have probably been the one to say, hey, let's figure out a way, you know, because you got to have every penny to come in. But at some point, you have to be at a point that you're taking care of your business. You got to look at your business like a child. You know, if you don't take care of it, if something goes wrong, how does it affect, you know, not for us business owners, financially affects us, mentally it affects us, it affects every one of us every day. So you just, sometimes you got to step up and realize when the customer is not the right customer, or guide them to someone that they may be able to go talk to see if they do have that coverage, or make yourself partners with certain financial institutions out there that may be able to extend them some type of financial means, instead of just looking at the box and saying cash or nothing, insurance or nothing, looking at outside that box, like we were talking about a minute ago, ways to maneuver it or navigate it.
Sure.
But then at the end of the day, you got to satisfy that customer.
Yeah. And so that's one of the things that's important for people to understand is, you know, there are in fact times where your customer's not going to be able to afford to make this proper repair from that perspective. And like, it's a tough environment to try to walk away from projects. And sometimes you have to, and sometimes, you know, don't just give up on something immediately and see if there's another alternative. Maybe there's, like John's saying, financing opportunities. And we've got a couple of those connected to Mr. Restore that we can plug into. And, you know, in John's case, you can reach out to a public adjuster that maybe can go find that coverage the right direction, see if there is something that exists and read through a policy and find out how it works and find out if there's, because in that, from that perspective, there could be, you may not have coverage for asbestos, but you may have code upgrade and that falls into a code, right?
Mm-hmm.
Does that, putting on your public adjuster hats, because this is a question for me right now, does me as a company protecting my employee fall into a code upgrade on, because the law requires this to happen as a company for me, fall into a code upgrade on a policyholder? Good question.
It's a good question. It's one that I will truly need to think about and sure. Punt and come back to you on.
Yeah.
But it's a good question.
I mean, I'm not putting you on the spot because I'm trying to catch you. I don't know the answer to that question.
Well, myself. I tell you, policies are really weird. You know, not to digress from what we're talking about, but I had a trauma one that we covered recently, and I got it covered under the explosion clause because I said the ammunition had an explosion before the projectile was released. And the argument actually stuck, and they changed it from a denied claim to a covered claim because it's something in the policy. So let me think on that one, and I'll come back to you. But I mean, it's...
We'll have to have a round two on the podcast at some point to answer that question solely, or a little snippet somewhere, because if we come up with an answer, I want to be able to share that with our people. And that really is just, again, I mean, you know, the whole purpose of the podcast is to find those little nuggets of information that somebody can glean onto and be able to utilize in their business to make them more successful. And this, you know, maybe one of those things where they're like, oh, I just need to think through it. And the answer to that question for us right now is that's where you would need to get someone like a John May as a public adjuster involved to navigate some of those questions and or get the financing in place so that your client can be covered on the services they really need to be able to have their house properly repaired regards to the water loss.
And, you know, you were talking about sometimes, we were saying sometimes it's that hard decision to make. I think that's where you go in, you train your people how to build that relationship in the beginning. So it's not a culture shock to that client. If you come to them and say, hey, look, this just isn't going to work out. I think if you build that relationship or as we like to call it, onboarding that client. I think if you build it right, if you have to go to them and say, hey, this isn't a great fit, they're not going to run off to Google and blast you with a one star and talk about how bad you are because they don't have the cash to do it.
Sure. So thinking through the entrepreneurial journey from the perspective of those that are listening to our conversation, what is the toughest thing you've run into in your entrepreneurial journey?
The toughest that I ran into work-life balance as the business owner, taking that hat off as the business owner at some point in the day. I think a lot of people, especially in the child part of the company, they want to keep it on there and then put the family hat on it, the personal hat on it, and just keep building on it. But just finding that point to take it off.
Which is tough, right? I mean,
it is.
You and I have both, especially when minds are wired like ours are wired, and it's always go time, right? Go, go, go. I need to do this. I need to navigate this. I need to have this other idea. The brain doesn't shut off. How do you, because I know you can't turn your brain off. It's constantly going in regard to whatever is out there for business. How do you pivot that? I know for guys like us, John, it's we can't turn the brain off, right? There's always thoughts about business and things that are going on and new ideas that pop in your head. And there's nothing you can do to control that. And that happens whether you're at a kid's game or at the doctor's office or whatever's happening with you, it's impossible to just turn that entrepreneurial mindset off. So how do you actively go about the work-life balance where you take the hat off? What steps do you take to engage accurately with your family?
So it took a lot of self-discipline and a wife who put her fist down. I do work up until I go to sleep and wake up thinking about it. And like you said, anywhere I went. So now I've gotten to where 5:30, I shut my phone off. In the afternoons, if it's going to blow up, the people that need to get in touch with me, they have other means. I just shut it off. I've changed my work schedule some to where I have one or two nights a week that I'll spend time with the family during the day because the kids are homeschooled, and I'll go to the office at 6 o'clock at night and work until 1 or 2 in the morning because everybody else is gone, and it's amazing how much work I can get done, and I'm focused and not oh, I heard this, I need to pull here. Self-discipline is how, and it's hard, especially for people like you said, you and I, that the wires are always there no matter where I'm at. I'm, you know, hey, did this get done? You got to put the people in place that you can build trust with.
Sure. And for me, it's hard to say no, right? I always want to help people. I want to say yes to whatever they ask me to do. And fortunately, I mean, yeah, like what you just said, I'm very fortunate to have people in place that can make a lot of this stuff happen that simply wouldn't be possible without their input, right? And then we obviously we built tools which you utilize to help kind of streamline things to make things better. But what is something you wish you had known when you jumped off into the entrepreneurial journey?
Something I wish I had known. I wish I had listened to the book Juggling Elephants a lot sooner than when I did. If you've never listened to it, it's a great book. It looks at the ringmaster of a circus and how he controls the three stages coming up. And the narrator talks about balancing that to an individual's life with the work plate, the personal plate, and the family plate. I wish I had found that sooner because that's part of what I use to curve my self-discipline. No matter how smart you are, it's not going to be easy.
No, I mean, I think, you know, like I listen to a lot of clips from Gary Vee, and I mean, it's going to be hard, right? The reality is it's hard. And life is hard if you're working for someone. Life is hard if you're unemployed. Life is hard if you're an entrepreneur. It's different types of hard, but it's going to be hard. And one of the things we've said on repeat on the podcast is expect it to be hard. And if you're quick to quit when it gets hard, you're going to quit because it's going to be hard. It's at some point, the entrepreneurial journey is difficult and frustrating, and you can't, I don't know of anybody that's been in a position where they've not had any kind of headaches or butt their head against the wall or some kind of problem along their journey. Even the most successful of those have had problems. Elon Musk has had problems and had to sleep on the floor in his factory to try to solve problems because it was going to implode his company. So like the reality is it's going to be hard, right? You agree with that? I think everybody does. I think the reality is you have to be set for the difficult side of entrepreneurship that's going to come, because then you have to navigate, well, which is harder, going back to a 9-to-5 job working for somebody else or battling through this entrepreneurial thing to make it on my own, putting it on your own back, being responsible for what you're going to have. It's going to be hard. So I applaud that sentiment, John, that you're saying.
And there's two things on that. First off, it wouldn't be called WD-40 if he hadn't failed 39 times, right?
Sure.
So a lot of people may not know that. You know, there's 39 recipes that didn't work, the 40th one did. And then defining yourself when you fail, do you get back up and do it? Or do you say, look, I'm done, I quit? That defines how successful you're going to be. You know, it may be hard to get back up, but if you get back up and chase it, eventually it's going to pay off. As long as you're not doing the same thing over and over and over.
Yeah, sure. Sure. I mean, the truth, right? Like, and there's a lot of guys that don't, like, you got to correct. Like, the 40th recipe worked because it was not the same as the first 39 recipes. If he continued to make the same thing, it was still never going to work. So you got to be willing to pivot on that to make things work the right direction. But then the reality is, you know, you don't fail unless you've quit. Once you quit, then you failed. But if you keep pressing, you didn't actually fail. You may have had setbacks and things might have looked really bad and really bleak, but the reality is you didn't actually fail until you've decided to completely go away with it. What's the best piece of advice you've been given, John?
Best piece of advice. Don't be ashamed to ask for help. Don't be ashamed to ask for help. And a lot of times you'll ask for help and the person will give you an answer and you're like, why didn't I think of that? And again, it goes back to we're so invested in what we're doing that instead of that box being out, we're right here. And that extra set of eyes, somebody going, oh, it's simple. There it is. And you may kick yourself for it, but asking for that little bit of help.
Yeah, I'm 100%. Right.
I'll be honest with you. There's times I'll call Lacey in your in job docs on something. And she's like, John, it's simple. It's this. I'm like, why didn't I think of that? Calling somebody else that's just an expert at it.
Yeah. I mean, the reality is we can't know everything as an individual. So you're not going to know everything. And in some cases, you can't see your own blind spots. That's why they're blind spots. So if you could do all of that, then you would be a unicorn and you wouldn't need anybody and life would be perfect. And I mean, what I say about our industry and the restoration side is if things went perfectly, we would all be out of business anyway. But things don't go perfectly, which is why we have an industry. And so, yeah, for sure, man, be willing to lean on those other people, having conversations. You and I have had phone conversations in the past to answer questions and to solve problems and navigate next steps. We try to do that I know you do as well, but we try to do that on a regular basis. Like, I'm always available. I tell people all the time, like, give me a call. If I'm not in the middle of something right then I will answer your question. If I am, then we'll circle back to it and we'll find an answer for it. Cause I may not know the answer, but together we can go look it up. And if nothing else, ChatGPT knows, it may not be the right answer, right, but at least knows the answer. It may be the wrong answer, but it's going to be an answer. And so I appreciate that, man. It's, our industry was for so long so competitive and so cutthroat that, you know, nobody would even have a conversation because they didn't want to know the reality of what your numbers were, or what you were doing, and what you really focused on, or trying to keep their cards so close to their chest that, you know, they weren't willing to share. But I think that's pivoted a little bit. Do you feel that as well?
I do. You know, you used to always hear my competitors. You don't hear that term thrown around the industry anymore, and you see more broad people talking across the industry. There for the longest, the citrus colored companies didn't want anything to do with anybody else. They stuck off to their side, and you see them now starting to mingle more. And I think it's a positive for the industry.
Yeah, for sure. And the reality is, with the high volume of, you know, private equity that's in the space right now, a lot of companies are starting to consolidate and becoming one company, regardless of whether they used to be competitors or not.
Right.
So, you know, that's always a possibility. It's always, the reality is there's always a possibility that you and I are going to be one company at some point, John, under somebody or together or whatever. And so viewing all those people as competitors is tough. So I appreciate that thought as well. If you were going to offer a piece of advice to an upcoming entrepreneur, somebody that's just getting started, what would you think you would want to say to them? If you were talking to John 20 years ago, what would you say?
Do your research, plan well, be ready for the blood, sweat, and tears, and enjoy the small wins. Don't let the small wins just go by, because enjoying those small wins is what'll carry you to the big win.
Absolutely. And think about that, man. Like, in today's world, that research is so much easier than what we've gone through to try to navigate. Right. I mean, unlike the stuff you can put into all the different AI tools that exist that are really accurate, right? They're not 100%, but man, like, it can run your whole, you know, business plan for you and do the math on it based on just, it's unbelievable what is out there. So if you need help doing the research, go to one of the AI tools, go to a ChatGPT or Gemini or Perplexity or any of those things that are out there, and ask the questions and do a good job of putting the prompts in. If you need help with that, like, reach out to me. I'll help you do that. I'm happy to help anybody that's listening to this navigate their next steps and help them make sure they're hopefully making a smart decision on, you know, the business they're wanting to start or jump into.
You know, the other thing I'd point out, everybody loves social media. We're a society of technology, and we're a society of sharing things on social media. New business owners need to be cautious of what they throw on their social media pages. I watched a company a couple of weeks ago that come up for their renewal of their general liability and workers' comp. And they had selected in the beginning, we do XYZ. The underwriter went to their Facebook page and found out they were doing a lot more than what they disclosed. So they hit them with back charges and current update premiums. And that little contractor got a bill for $80,000 and was 30 days to pay it, or workers' comp was canceled. So
it's hurt, right?
For a small company, they could put them out of business.
Yeah, for sure. That's a good point. Like, yeah, be smart, because the reality is anything you put out there is out there for forever. It's somewhere. It's not going away. You might delete it from the place you put it, but four other things picked it up and spread it out there someplace else. And we say the same kind of thing to our kids all the time. Be smart about what you put on your social media pages, because it's there and people can see it. Schools are going to look at it. They're going to want to know who you are. They're going to navigate some of that. Same thing applies to your business. And you know, a lot of guys don't think about that. Don't be intentionally offensive to any group of people just because, right? I mean, it's so weird how some of that works. But, well, final thoughts, final wisdom to share, John.
Final wisdom. Get up every morning, put a smile on your face. The day you put your feet down and you don't enjoy it, get out. The morning you wake up and you're not happy to be the business owner, you're not happy to write those paychecks, start looking at doing something different.
Good thoughts. Good thoughts. Well, John, I appreciate you, brother. It's always good to chat with you. I'm glad we finally got you on.
Yeah, definitely.
We need to circle back and do this again at some point too, because there's a lot of wisdom there. I know you've got a lot of things that you could share and we could talk about, but you know, we committed to keeping this thing around 35 minutes or so. And some days I get in and I'm like, man, I could just keep chatting about this stuff. But
right.
I certainly appreciate you, man.
Yeah, thanks. Definitely. I'm glad to be on and come back again.
Thanks for being on. We'll see you.